The Anton Savage Show
with Kearys.ie
on News Talk.
It is News Talk. It's the Anton Savage Show with you through until 12 o'clock. I'm joined by Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, Saoirse McHugh, Independent Candidate for the Midlands Northwest, and John Cunningham, Relationship Director with Morgan McKinley, to have a look at the stories making the news today. And we might just go back to where we were briefly before the break. We were talking to Matt Cooper about the life of Tony O'Reilly, otherwise known as Sir Anthony O'Reilly, on the front page of the Sunday Indo, titan of the Irish business world, dying at the age of 88. You dealt with him a couple of times, John.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting him a number of times over the years, and I suppose, again, Matt covered it off well, but he was the first version of a Renaissance man we've ever had in Ireland. And I think that on a day like today, there'll be a lot written about him. And I think, again, at the end of the day, that how it all came to an end, and indeed the role that AIB played in that process, was something I think was quite disgraceful. But on a day like today, I suppose he's fundamentally a dad and a granddad.
He did double down a lot, and he did raise his debts to an extraordinary degree.
He did, and he engaged in a process of trying to resolve that. Let's not go into it now, but again, he was somebody who should have been, I think, dealt with more fairly. And again, I don't think anybody can ever underestimate the impact he had on the Ireland brand and Ireland Inc. in a global context. So I think on a day like today, we'll think of his children and his grandchildren, and may he rest in peace.
We will move on to politics. There is a lot of political stories, a lot of political analysis, some of it coming from Gary Murphy, who is sitting across the table there. Gary, you are writing that the what you're describing as the Sinn Féin slide in the polls is a sign of voters losing patience.
Yes, Anton. I think like one would have to be living under a rock not to know that immigration has certainly become the touchstone, I think, for political discourse in Ireland today. There are good pieces by Shane Ross and Odo Bally, my DCU colleague in the Sunday Indo, on the impact of immigration. And my point in my own piece in the Sunday Times, where we have a poll that shows Sinn Féin steady at 27%. They're at 23% in that sort of bombshell Irish Times poll during the week. Now, 23%, remember, is lower than they were in the 2020 general election. And there's been a couple of polls, again, one yesterday in the Irish Times yesterday, and one today in the Sunday Indo, showing that they will win a seat in Dublin, Ireland South and Midlands Northwest. But for five seats in Midlands Northwest and South, Sinn Féin should be competitive in two to try and get two seats if we're expecting the Sinn Féin breakthrough in the general election. And remember, the polls have been pretty rock steady in the low to mid 30s for a long time. And now, of course, in the last couple of months, the vote is whittled away.
But Gary, if I'm Sinn Féin, am I not looking at this and saying, well, fine, even if we're 3 points back from the early 30s or 4 points back from the early 30s, if you had told us 15 years ago that we'd be the largest party in the state looking at where, we'd take it.
Oh, completely. And I make this point. I mean, it's better to be in Sinn Féin or better be a Sinn Féin strategist or candidate than anybody else, because you're getting more votes still. Well, with the exception of the Irish Times poll, which had Sinn Féin and Fine Gael level, which, you know, Fine Gael for a long time have wanted Irish politics to be a sort of a dichotomy, them and Sinn Féin and everybody else sort of fighting for the scraps. But I've been trying to think why is Sinn Féin losing this vote. And there was some analysis by Pat Leahy in the Irish Times that the party has been very progressive and very, I think, honourable and acted with integrity when it comes to the immigration question. But its supporters, its sort of working class base, is becoming increasingly frustrated. And that's my point about voters and undecided voters losing a bit of patience. And it's been a bad week for Sinn Féin. It started off very badly in Northern Ireland with Michelle O'Neill's evidence to the COVID inquiry there, which I think anyone who saw any of it would say that was very discomforting for her and I think for the party, going back to the infamous Bobby Storey funeral. And we talked about Tony O'Reilly earlier on. And of course, people are entitled to grieve, but of course we know there were thousands of people all across the island who couldn't grieve properly during COVID. And I think that was very uncomfortable for Sinn Féin. So it's been a bad week for them. Now, politics, as Saoirse will know, things can change quite quickly. We still have a few weeks to go. But I do think there's a trend here that will worry Sinn Féin very much.
It has to be said, though, Saoirse, nobody is getting... It isn't like you can point to any individual party in the Dáil and say, well, they are either making a good fist of dealing with immigration or have a policy that is clear, coherent and looks like it'll solve our problem.
No, and what's really worrying, I think, is that I worry that a lot of the bigger parties will try and chase an anti-immigrant vote.
Sit in
vote.
Slightly on that microphone.
Sorry.
If you would, Saoirse.
Is that better?
Yep.
We'll try and chase an anti-immigrant vote and are trying to act like maybe this is something that can be dealt with once and for all. But migration will always happen. It has always happened. It will always happen. And it ebbs and flows. But I worry that the kind of narrative of crisis is pushing the likes of Fine Gael and Sinn Féin to try and maybe get a vote that isn't necessarily clear as to how big it is.
Well, but steady, where we say it ebbs and flows, it has been steadily, softly ebbing for 115 years and now it's flowing like a tsunami in the other direction. That's a significant shift.
Well, that's not
shift.
True. In 2015, there was a big flow of migration into Europe and that dropped off again and it's increasing again. It does ebb and flow.
But you can't point to a point in recent history where you could say we have had the kind of influx of 100,000 Ukrainian refugees in a 2-year period where we have tents springing up on Grand Canal. There's no recent memory of anything like that.
Not necessarily in Ireland, but across the world. Like the history of the whole world is the history of people moving.
Indeed, but that doesn't affect voters in Tubbercurry until it happens
in
Ireland.
No, and what's interesting is knocking on the doors, and I've spoken to a good few other people canvassing on this, is the amount of, I suppose, space that migration is taking up in the media is not actually reflective on the doors. Like housing is still coming up. Now, you definitely will. I had quite an awful interaction with a man in Kildare. I was afraid he'd go for me. Extremely violent, shouting and roaring the most obscene things. But on the whole, housing is what's coming up consistently. And you do get people say, you know, people will raise migration. And it does seem to be quite localised with other canvassers I've spoken about.
But they're kind of linked, aren't they? Like immigration and the housing crisis, I think, have become linked.
Well, I think
in the eyes of many voters, those who've been on housing lists for a very long time, and concerned then that they're being jumped, but whether that's true or not. And there's no great evidence that it is true. But I do think the housing issue and the huge influx of immigrants. Now, remember, there was significant inwards immigration into Ireland in the early 2000s, but all these people were working. And so maybe that's an issue as well.
But I think, and this is what's really concerning at the moment, you mentioned this issue of the crisis narrative. They need to take back the narrative here, which is step back for a moment. And first of all, immigration in Ireland is a permanent issue. It has been up until now fundamentally a positive issue, and it has been a very relatively good experience for most people. We understand, we keep saying, that the economy and society could not function without our migrant workers. And if we have any desire to even fulfil the next level of growth, we need more. So we need to take that narrative back, because I think what Saoirse has alluded to, I think there's a crisis reaction at the moment. And I was at the Dublin Chamber, had a hustings event with 6 candidates for the European election. I spoke to them all, and they're definitely getting immigration on the drawing, getting some really, really toxic conversations. But it's really specific things like the fear and the concern about 15 or 20 young men being put in a house or a building in a locality, all right? So first of all, we've got to understand there are legitimate concerns that people are expressing, and because they're expressing them doesn't mean they're right-wing. They actually have real concerns. What's more concerning is, at a government level, there still is this lack of integrated strategic thinking with regard to this issue. I chaired an expert group for Fine Gael County Council a number of years ago when Paul Reid was there, and they had huge concerns about integration. And we put together, and they put together, the most extraordinarily successful integration plan that dealt with all of these issues. There are solutions, and they need to be really kind of engaged with really quickly. But my biggest concern at the moment is that this crisis narrative regarding the tents and groups of young men being put into locations is distracting from the fact
that... But hang on, John, clarify for me. I don't understand the use of the word narrative. Surely it is a crisis.
It is a crisis, but I think that in the context of the immigration conversation, it's got lost. And all we're concerning ourselves with now is the crisis element of what's here. The bottom line is that if we don't haul this back, Ireland is heading for a really, really, really concerning, I think, local election. We've now got candidates who have put themselves up explicitly as anti-immigrant, and there are people responding to that.
So you're saying that's not what you're finding on the doorsteps?
No, but I'm not finding it on the doorsteps, but I have, like I said, I've spoken to a lot of canvassers, a lot of people saying they aren't, but the people who say it is coming up, it seems to be quite localised. You know, we talk about a migration crisis, but really it's a housing crisis being played out with, you know, people who have come here seeking international protection. And it doesn't make, you know, it's been used to pit maybe different groups off each other. But in reality, we're all being affected by the same crisis, which is a housing crisis. And like kind of John was alluding to there, I have a relative in hospital at the moment, and it is almost entirely staffed by people not born in Ireland. And I shudder to think what we do in our hospitals without them. But we're all being affected by the housing crisis.
But and John, also, first of all, let me just pick up with that. Do you accept that characterization that it is all of a single entity which is linked to the housing crisis? Or do we have two separate things? Mass immigration and mass seeking of international protection, which we've never had before to this extent, and separately a housing crisis that are overlapping?
I think they are absolutely two distinct, different strategic issues. They've become connected as part of just the reality. But if the government doesn't develop a strategic plan with regard to what Ireland would look like, what the policy is, make it as transparent as possible and make it clear, because at the moment it's arbitrary. There's also this kind of awful sense that Ireland has been kind and aren't we great for letting these people in. The reality is that that's not a way of approaching this. It needs to be strategic. It's not. And all it's doing is compounding what is already a major problem with regard to housing. But they are two completely separate issues that are just now, I think, accentuating each other in the context of what we're experiencing right now.
Come back then, Gary, to the politics of all of this. You talked about how tricky this issue is for Sinn Féin. I assume it is also extremely tricky for the government parties, because we saw Simon Harris sweep clean Mount Street only for the problem to move 3 feet down the road.
Indeed, yeah. No, it's a difficult issue for all parties, and it's also a difficult issue for those who are campaigning potentially on that sort of anti-migrant sentiment. I mean, because again, the Irish Times poll showed that a majority of people still have a strong view that immigration has been a good thing for Ireland, Irish people, and indeed the Irish state. Certainly talked about workers in the health service, and I know when my late mother was living with me, all our home helps were not born in Ireland. They were magnificent people, great workers contributing to the community. But it is a very difficult issue for a government, and I agree with John to an extent. There does seem to be a sort of an ad hocery to it. Now I understand why that's the case, because you mentioned it yourself, Anton, at the start of the programme. If we were in January, let's put ourselves back to the 23rd of February 2022, the day before the barbaric Russian invasion of Ukraine. And what have we seen since then? Is it now 130,000 Ukrainians have come to our shores fleeing, you know, the first war in Europe since the tragic events in the Balkans in the late 1990s. And no government, you know, could have prepared for that. So I do have some sympathy for the way the government has tried to handle this, because it is... it's a problem that has, it's unprecedented.
And Saoirse looked very sceptical when you said no government could have prepared for it. Do you accept that, Saoirse?
Well, no, I accept that no government could have prepared for what Russia was going to do going into Ukraine and the results that would have had. But I also think that the government should have prepared. Like, we've had direct provision and housing have been massive issues for decades. And it was in the programme for government that direct provision would have been
abolished.
Replaced with a much, like, there are people stuck in direct provision, first of all, waiting years on a decision. They can't move on with their lives. And then getting a decision and having nowhere to go. But I also think this most recent, if we're going to talk about an acute crisis, this, you know, these tents and the kind of running count that has been going on with them, is a lot of this is a crisis now because the government have basically been rolled over by what has amounted to a domestic kind of terror campaign. People setting fire to so many buildings also has had a chilling effect on other, maybe, I don't know, empty hotel owners who would have come forward otherwise. And I do worry at the direction that Simon Harris seems to take. Like, he did this interview, I can't remember with who, where he talks about letting these tent cities fester, which is really quite fascistic language, and it I think it adds to dehumanisation. And also, he's the most powerful man in Ireland. I think he can do a bit more than use quite inflammatory language like that.
You talked about
his responsibility,
the overlap with the housing crisis and the pressures in the housing system. John, the front page of the Business Post: top developers fear Sinn Féin's radical plan will stall housing, and they have a quote from Isabel Gallagher, who's head of development at Quintain, saying if there's a change in government, whoever that ends up being, so regardless of whether it's Sinn Féin or anybody else, if they reinvent the wheel and have to go through the whole process all over again, it's going to create uncertainty in the sector, which will slow us down. And there are an awful lot of analysts who are saying that even the housing targets that are currently being barely reached at 35 odd thousand per annum may be half of what we actually need per year.
Well, first of all, the housing issue just seems to be here as a perennial issue, and it's still unresolved. I suppose what the article is talking about in that Sinn Féin sense is the fact that there's this constant U-turn that Sinn Féin have with regard to any sort of key strategic issue. And the bottom line is that whether we like it or not, and while it's not resolved, some really strong progress, I think, has been made on the housing thing with regard to additional funding and building and development. And the reason it hasn't happened is because it's really complex and it's really difficult. And you can only imagine if there's a change of government in a really material sense, okay, and somebody's to try and start from scratch again, it is absolutely going to lead to delays. It's going to lead to all sorts of confusion with regard to what's available. I mean, on the basis that the government have tried so hard to get developers back into Ireland, having chased them out as they did before, all right, any sense of uncertainty with regard to planning laws, strategy.
So how do you mean the government chased developers out of Ireland?
After the crisis.
After many of them went bust.
After many of them went bust. And after
many of them. By the state.
Hold on.
They left this country, and many of them were, I believe, often much maligned with regard to what happened. The developers developed. But anyhow, they left Ireland, and they travelled the world to find new work. When the government and the country then started to rebuild, there was nobody here to do it. So they've been coaxing them back and trying to encourage them to come back and do the job that's required. So don't anybody underestimate the fact that while developers were a part of the process, they weren't the cause of the problem.
They were a significant contributor. Debt up to the absolute eyeballs that we ended up having to bail out.
And lent to them by the banks in an economy that was fit for purpose and everything was in order. So there's a very complex set of relationships.
In which they were a key player.
Absolutely. No denying that.
If I was in Sinn Féin, I would be delighted with the story on the front of the Business Post. An owner, Brian, doubles down and gives a good belt back to the when he's approached by the reporter's owner here and Donald McNamee by saying anyone who doesn't think that there isn't a crisis, you know, is not really living in the real world. And if you're living at home like my two 20-odd-year-olds and have no intentions of ever moving out, you might say, well, you know, it's not working for me, the current government. And now we have the builder saying, oh, things are terrible, but it'll be much worse. You'd say, well, why won't I vote for Sinn Féin?
And this is the point that Sinn Féin are making, John. What Owen O'Brien says all of the time is, look, we are told that this is an intractable problem because you keep trying to apply the same solution. We will sweep them out of the way and we'll build publicly.
Easily said, I think. All right. And I think that, you know, there's an absolute desire, I think, amongst any kind of right-thinking people that there needs to be some element of government control with regard to actual building, okay? I don't think it's as straightforward as that. And I think, again, we still have Sinn Féin who have never actually explained to us how they're going to build them and how they're going to create houses for 240,000, which at the moment, there's no spreadsheet in the world could make that up from my perspective. So again, I think that's a really dangerous conversation. And I think people are so vulnerable at the moment with regard to housing. I've also two 20-odd-year-old children, one who recently moved into a rented house recently, which was a great relief to all of us. But
you love that child very much, John.
I love that child very much. And I didn't encourage twice to go to IKEA to help get the things to help them about. But I think that this promised land conversation with regard to cheap houses for everybody is a really dangerous conversation.
But isn't it very interesting, though, also that Piers Doherty was discussing what investment would look like with Davy Stockbrokers when they issued their report that came out during the week. I mean, anyone who also thinks the idea that so there's going to be some radical reconstruction of Irish politics if Sinn Féin lead. And I write today that I'm doubtful how a coalition can actually be formed. But let's say there's a Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil coalition and a few extras, or a Sinn Féin led soft left, the Greens, the Social Democrats, Labour and a few others, to think that somehow there's going to be a radical, like, we're not in the days of Gerry Adams and the 32 county socialist republic utopia. I mean, Sinn Féin are not, that's not the Sinn Féin of Mary Lou MacDonald, Piers Doherty, Owen O'Brien and all their smart people wherever they live.
Now, the only one sitting around this table who actually has to come up with answers to these kind of questions when faced with them on the doorsteps is Saoirse. So, Saoirse, tell you what, rather than trying to compress it into a tight space of time with an ad break up against it, let's take the break and then we'll get what your view is in relation to housing. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087-1400-106 if you want to get in touch. Back after this break.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
It's the Anton Savage Show. With me is Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, John Cunningham, Relationship Director of Morgan McKinley and Chair and Country Director of the Lysis Group, and Saoirse McHugh, Independent Candidate for the Midlands Northwest. And we were saying before the break, Saoirse, you are the one who is actually facing the electorate dealing with the kind of questions around things like housing. What is it that people are saying and what is their expectation?
Well, I suppose around housing, the constituency I'm in is from Achill Island all the way over to Selbridge and then Donegal all the way down to Leash Offaly. And so the housing needs are very different. Like in Achill, an issue I've experienced myself is it's mostly holiday homes. It's very difficult to find anywhere to rent and all the costs are inflated because of the holiday home kind of potential of everywhere. And then, of course, over on the East Coast, it's much more, there's just nowhere to rent. There's nowhere in a reasonable area, that a reasonable time that you can commute. Housing has never been a competency of the EU, but there's a lot that the EU can do. It can make sure it's out of the way in terms of states regulating. Like the EU stepped in to stop, to put a big pause on Ireland bringing in their short-term residential register. Now that has been all cleared out, and that should be kind of coming in over the next few months, I'd say. But also it can make sure that spending rules are not impacting on government's ability to build social housing. And also I do think there is a justification for an EU emergency response on housing, because it is an EU-wide problem. But just on that story that was in the Business Post about warning, you know, developers warning Sinn Féin, that's what they do. Like the story below it is big tech warns that without subsidies, they're in risk. Like if I could put these threats in, be like, I need more money or I'm gone. Of course you would. I think that's just, it's nonsense. Like, why would they be, like, of course they're going to say that, you know?
Well, yes, it is kind of, you need us and it yeah, does help with us remaining profitable when you give us this pile of money.
They're like, we need more, we're going, we swear to God.
The other thing that I want to get your views on is this is sublime to ridiculous, but nonetheless, it is something that people have been talking about a lot. Saoirse, let me kick off with you. The loss of the portal to New York.
It's like, first of all, what did they think would happen? And second of all, they should have just left it. Of course people were going to moon it. And eventually, had it just been left, people would start ignoring it. And now they've made such a deal out of it that if it goes back on, like, everyone will want to go act the maggot. Like, it's, I think the real issue is people being a bit too easily spooked by a bum or a pair of boobs. Like we've never seen a pair of boobs in Ireland.
There are people waiting and thinking of the most extraordinary, fabulous things to do in front of this portal the minute it's open.
To get it reshut
down.
And
it'll be on the front of the New York Times and the Financial Times and the Singapore Times when it happens again, because they've now created a dynamic around it that is going to be hard to contain.
Yeah.
Harry Crosby says the problem was that it was put on the north side.
Yeah, it should be in the south side.
Where they have no bums.
The quieter south side, no less.
Stephen's Green.
Of all the mad things I've read in a long time, that's pretty high up there. And Display is really a very worrying classist view of the world.
No, apparently once you go across the river, your desire to drop your pants decreases exponentially.
They all wear dungarees, maybe.
There's a good piece by Éilis O'Hanlon on the back page of the Sunday Indo, making the point that what Saoirse says, well, like, what do they expect would happen? But also then making the point that if there are public order offences committed, leave the Gardaí deal with it as they would deal with any other public order offences, and otherwise just leave it go. And it will eventually, or should eventually, sort of level out or even out, and life goes on.
Except they've made such a deal out of it.
Indeed.
The bit that amazed me about it was, whatever about the desire for people to quote your phrase, to act the maggot, I was surprised at the meanness of some of it. The people deciding to moon it, I thought, well, that was eminently predictable that was going to happen. But showing pictures of 9/11, that surprised me. No, am I naive about people?
No, I'm with you. I think that shows a very worrying sort of, well, a lack of sort of not just decorum, but of our history, of the history of the world. I just think it, yeah, like where would it end? And all the stuff like people showing pornography. I mean, seriously.
But the 9/11 thing, you'd actually have to find that person, as against making it a kind of some particular individual thought this was either fun or provocative. Okay, and you'd have to find them. And actually have a conversation, say, on what basis do you think that was actually a clever thing to do? Because again, we need to not catastrophize the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It was one person did it, okay? And you know, this, but it does make you realize we're in a world, and again, I suppose this is the commentary, like in a world where we've got the internet and TikTok and everything, and you can, and OnlyFans, you can do whatever you want, okay? What would you expect? But now what they've done is created this extraordinary focus of when it's been switched on again, and all I can say is watch this space.
Will it be switched on again?
It should be. Like, we shouldn't be like, we actually can't have anything because we're too afraid of, like, that people acting the maggot. Even the 9/11 thing, I wouldn't have done it. But also, they're New Yorkers. I'm sure they can manage a picture and they can just walk on if they like, you know?
Well, I have to bigger fish to fry.
The one thing in this that I think is, if you were the artist involved, wouldn't you be saying, now, there, lads, that is an art installation. To create something that gets this level. How often do you see a sculpture get put in a motorway that ends up across all of the newspapers?
You don't.
Everybody arguing about it. Not bad going. I want to go back to a thing that you said earlier on, Saoirse, because we are going to be talking in a while to Noreen O'Sullivan, who is the former Garda Commissioner and also the UN Deputy Secretary General in charge of UN security. And she's just finished doing a task force report looking at the safety of politicians and what needs to be done to protect politicians. You described a doorstep interaction with a man who you said was frighteningly aggressive. Without sacrificing the anonymity of the individual, what happened?
I was just knocking on doors, beautiful evening, birds singing, and I went to walk away. There was no answer. I put my leaflet in the thing and he kind of came up to, you know, these walls behind where people keep their bins. He came up to there. And before I said, hi, I'm just canvassing for the European elections. And he launched into the most obscene, violent things about migrants, about Palestinians. I couldn't even repeat what he was saying. He kept using the N-word. And I kind of froze a bit because I realised my brother, who I was canvassing with, had gone off and around. And I thought he was going to lunge at me. And I was just like, okay, have a nice day. And trying to walk away. And he just kept screaming at me, calling me names. And anyway, I came
and you
home.
Were frightened by this.
I was quite frightened. But then I tweeted about it. And then I saw that Tanya Doyle had been attacked. That was in the news. Like, physically attacked, her and her husband. So obviously what I went through was nothing. Janet Horner has been attacked. Two ladies putting up the Sock Dems posters, I think, were threatened with a knife. And this is what a lot of canvassers are saying as well, that it's just far more frightening than it was even 5 years ago. There are people who are extremely violent out there. And of course, like, they've been harassing library staff for years now. They've been harassing teachers in different areas. Arson, like, they're very violent people. And they have been, in a lot of ways, they have kind of gotten away with a lot of this violence.
You've been following politics a long time, Gary. Is it changing? Is it getting more?
I do think it's getting coarser, certainly. The appalling abuse that Saoirse and others have encountered is, I think, new. I mean, we talked of Tony O'Reilly earlier, years ago, of course. Des O'Malley would have had, and all ministers for justice would have had protection from the provost and whatnot, but we've never seen anything quite like this. And I've been making the point for years. I mean, the people who are running for office are our peers. They're not some strange people who wander down from the sky. There are people in our communities. Like, I wrote a piece a few weeks ago about the importance of migrants running for office, which they can do and can vote in the local elections because they're no part of our communities. Now, you know, it's a very difficult problem because you have people who are, like, clearly sort of unhinged and feel as if they can say anything and even physically abuse and assault candidates, and it needs to be clamped down. But it needs to be clamped down is a very easy thing to say when Garda manpower is stretched considerably as it is. But I mean, two British politicians have been killed in the last 8 years.
Robert Fico alone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. In Slovakia. So I mean, we would be very naive to think that there couldn't be a very serious incident here.
I hope it's not naive, but I think, again, in the context of the conversation we've had here today, it is incumbent upon the listeners in this programme today to, when they can, to call out racism and xenophobia, right? Now, in a case like Saoirse encountered, you just walk away from that. But we need to call it out and we need to say it as we see it. We're better than that.
But isn't it interesting, sorry, that, like, you didn't even say what you were, who you were representing, what you were campaigning on. He just launched in before she even said a word.
Plague on all your houses.
Plague on all your houses.
And just to say, a man has been killed for not speaking English.
Indeed,
Ireland. Yeah. And I do think there's a lot of elected reps who have done a lot to feed this radicalisation, have walked people right up to the line of violence and are now claiming...
But in a democracy, the greatest thing we have is our vote, so don't vote for those candidates.
As I say, Noreen O'Sullivan will be with us with her analysis from chairing that task force. Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, Saoirse McHugh, independent candidate for the Midlands Northwest, and John Cunningham, Relationship Director at Morgan McKinley. Thank you all very much.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.